Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
So I'm going to wait a few minutes. It's already recording. So don't say anything that you don't want to be preserved forever. We'll wait a couple of minutes. I'm glad to see that Brent is here. I don't know who that 393 number is. Is that you, Brent? Are you muted?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. So the 393 number is you?
Nope.
You don't know who that is. We'll find out soon enough, or maybe not, who knows? Couple of minutes more, okay? Hello, Randy. The 393 number seems to be talking, but we cannot hear anything. I wonder why that is. Is that Randy? Is that your number? It's conference season. I guess that must be why Drummond is not here and some others.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are at IIW this week.
Yeah, Kim told me that. Okay. Kim Cameron.
So we don't have a docking station.
Can barely hear Cora's talking. I don't know. Is there a, are you saying something or is it the background noise?
I think that was background noise from me. I'll keep muted unless I'm talking.
I got to keep myself muted. Otherwise, the New York City sirens take over. Welcome, Luca Bolden.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Who's this 393 person? He's attempting to talk, but I can see the telephone flashing, but no sound. Maybe because they've turned the sound down. Okay,
This is Luca. I'm on the phone as well since I am having trouble with the audio, but I will.
Oh, okay. So it's you. Okay, great.
Yeah, it's me. Sorry.
No problem. Yeah. No, we were just wondering about the mystery person. Anyway, I think we should start because we shouldn't hang out. A lot of people are at IIW, according to Brent and others. And so we have, you know, not the usual quorum of people, but I wanted them to hear and to experience Brent's pitch on the DID working group. I think I'm going to start with the antitrust policy notice, which everyone is familiar with. You can see it on your screen. I take it, you know. So basically, it is the anti-competitive antitrust policy that we should all adhere to, and that is the only requirement that we have in terms of attendance at these meetings. We are not a membership organization. We are not a, you know, the call is open to everybody. And no, Brent, this is not a criticism of W3C policies. All are welcome in the Hyperledger community, so everybody is welcome as long as you adhere to the code of conduct, which is no disrespect and don't, you know, shout down people or say nasty things about them. That's about it. And the first thing that we do on these calls often is go down the list and introduce people. So what I'm going to do is start with me and end with Brent, and then he can take it away. So I am the chair of this identity working group. I've been involved in Hyperledger since 2015, 2016, somewhere around there, whenever it started. And I've been the chair of the Identity Working Group for a while. Now I've also launched a capital markets special interest group for people who are interested in that silo or business line. And I run a small consulting firm on digital transformation and blockchain. Now for Z.
All right, I'm here. Hi, Z here. I'm working on a project on land rights in Africa, and that project is still in inception, I would say inception process. I joined here about a year ago, continue to want to learn more on identity or help beginner on how to navigate this land.
Mike Brown.
Hey, Vipin. Mike Brown. I've connected into these calls once in a while. I lead our blockchain and digital identity work at ATB Financial and lead our Alberta credentials ecosystem, where we're building out utilization of Hyperledger Indy for credentials for Albertans. And we should be doing pilot testing with real people later this year or beginning of next year.
Okay. Next is Luca.
This is Luca Boldrin from InfoCert, which is a certification authority and trust service provider based in Europe. I'm personally based in Italy. We work in traditional identity management and certification, PKI stuff, but we are also involved as a steward in sovereign network. We are exploring the sub-sovereign identity bridge to the traditional identity world.
Thank you, Luca. I think the next is Brent, and he'll also start his presentation, probably. And after that, we can go back to the other items on the menu.
Hello, everyone. My name is Brent Zundel. I work for Evernym. By training, I am a cryptographic engineer. By activity, I've become something of a standards engineer, apparently. About a year ago, I became heavily involved with the Verifiable Credentials Working Group at the W3C and helped move that spec forward. And any day now, we'll find out whether it's become an official recommendation of the W3C, which is, you know, fingers crossed for that. About a month ago, the Decentralized Identifier Working Group started up at the W3C, and Vipin asked me to come on this meeting and talk a little bit about what we hope to do and what we want to get done. I don't have much of a presentation, but I do have a couple of slides I could show if people are interested.
Please do. And then we can also go to this particular EID, the editor's draft. But you can take over the sharing if you want.
Yeah, it's giving me an error because you're already sharing.
Okay, I'll stop my sharing, and then I should stop sharing. Okay.
There we go. Let's see if I can find it.
You should be able to take over now.
Okay. So I have a couple of different decks I'm going to be going between. The Decentralized Identifier Working Group has four deliverables that we'll be working on in the course of the two-year charter that we've started. The most important one, the recommendation track specification, is the DID spec, the Decentralized Identifiers version 1 specification. We'll also produce some notes, which are, they're not standards track, they're not official recommendations, but they will provide feedback and guidance. One of these is a use cases and recommendations document. We also are planning to produce a rubric about decentralized characteristics. This rubric is what will allow a decentralized identifier method to describe how decentralized it is in a standard way. One of the challenges that we had in forming this group was outside people going, well, what does decentralized even mean anyway? And so one of the group outputs is going to be this rubric that helps to answer that question. We're also going to have a test suite which will produce an implementation report. So any implementers who have implementations according to the spec can run this test suite, and it will show what they're compliant with and what they're not. A little more detail on the decentralized identifier spec. The spec is going to define what does a DID look like and what is the URI scheme, because a DID is a URI. It will recommend a data model and the syntaxes for how decentralized identifier documents are specified. And it'll have a set of requirements for DID method specifications. And those three components are what create the core of the DID specification. Now, I'm not sure, I'm assuming this group has familiarity with DIDs already, but I can go as deep or as shallow there. I think I'd prefer at this point to really just take questions and go wherever the group wants to go.
I have some exposure to DIDs, but I'm not sure of the other participants, so Anybody who wants to ask about DIDs and about what a URI is, for example, I mean, most people know the full form, but which is Universal Resource Identifier, I think it is.
So, this is Kelly. One thing I was thinking is if you could take a look at the draft of the white paper where we define decentralized identification and see if we're kind of on track or off track. It would probably only take about 5 or 10 minutes of your time because we want to be able to confirm that the group's understanding or interpretation as drafted in the white paper, it aligns with what it is that you're working on with W3.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Is there a link to that document that you could?
Yeah, it's in the agenda.
Yes, I'm on my phone. Okay. It should be there. Okay.
It's in the agenda, the white paper. But most of that material is taken direct.
I think a lot of it was taken from the sovereign framework work and then from other people, but it hasn't been looked at for a little while. And so it could be that the W3 is moving along a little differently. So I think it would be good to get a second set of eyes on that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So the working group, one of the first resolutions that we made as the working group was to take as a starting point the draft specification produced by the community group. There's a whole division in the W3C between what a working group is and what a community group is. And the community group has incubated this specification for 3 years now. And we're starting right where they left off. So we have quite a large body of work already. Vipin actually had it up on his screen there. So I can stop sharing if we want to go there.
Bring it on. I mean, because, you know, then you have control over what you want to show there. Right?
Yeah,
there must be a link somewhere in your documents. Yeah.
There we go.
And okay. we also have the link inside our agenda. So in case anybody wants to go there, it's there. So of course, the editors, as you know, Raman, who participates on this call, and Marcus, who has sometimes appeared on this call. But I suspect that many people are very involved in just identity-specific stuff. Not Hyperledger itself or Hyperledger Identity Working Group.
So the abstract, I think, provides a pretty good ground statement for the direction we're heading. The DID is an identifier that doesn't require a central authority. And there are a lot of different flavors of that, what that means to different people. But DIDs relate to a DID subject. Their paper talks about the idea of a DID controller who, you know, is one of the holders of the private keys that allow, you know, the expression of authentication or control according to the DID document. But basically, a DID is an identifier with an associated document. There is an assurance provided by the DID method that the document is associated with the identifier. The document can be updated. The document holds public keys that can be used to verify control of the identifier, as well as provide endpoints for communication purposes and other metadata about the subject. So it basically the DID takes the notion of a public-private key pair, that double of a, you know, if I have the private key, I can use the public key to verify things. It takes that double and makes it into a triple by attaching an identifier to it. And that identifier is persistent and under the control of the DID controller. It doesn't need to change. It doesn't require any authority to register it. It's an identifier that's more in the hands of the user.
So another question, it's Ethereum part of this, or anyone from their organization or group in this working group?
Yes, my
other blockchains.
Yes, we have a representative who works primarily with DIDs that are based on Bitcoin, the BTCR DID method. We have several representatives from Consensus, which is an Ethereum blockchain consortium of companies. One of those companies is Uport. We also have representatives from them who are building on the Ethereum blockchain. There are several DID methods on each of those chains. My co-chair is actually from Consensus.
Which is the Ethereum Atelier.
Yes. We have quite a good group of participants. I'm really excited as we get moving forward. Some of the limitations that we experienced working on the verifiable credential specification were that at the time of the group's creation, verifiable credentials and this whole notion of self-sovereign identity were very, very much on the fringe. And so we didn't get a lot of participation from larger organizations. But with the working group, we've had agreements to join from Microsoft. The Wikimedia Foundation has joined in. We have members from governments around the world. And as I predict that as the group moves forward, we'll get even more and more interest and participation from these larger organizations and companies as they see the progress that we're making and see the possibilities for their own organizations that DIDs can provide. Does anyone else have any more questions for me?
You know, some of the questions would be around things like, I mean, I know that you have probably answered them in this venue. For example, why should there be a triple? Why couldn't the public key itself function as, that was one of the questions that was raised. Then, of course, the answer was that you cannot have multiple public keys and multiple methods proving that you are in control.
Right. The persistent identifier allows for rotation of keys. There is a DID key method that is, the identifier portion of the DID is just the public key, but it's, it basically allows a public-private key pair to fit into the DID ecosystem. But a fully conformant DID would have public keys associated with it, and those public keys can change over time. Service endpoints can change over time. DNS and website information can be associated inside the DID document, and those can change over time. A toy example that we occasionally give is if I wanted to have a DID for my collection of cat videos, I could set up an identifier and any I could publish it and say, hey, here are some great cat videos. And it wouldn't matter where those videos are hosted because I could change the service endpoint inside of the document anytime I needed to. So regardless of where the cat videos ultimately reside or how often that residence changes, the identifier for them doesn't have to change. It's one of the I think, powerful notions, even for that toy example. We can, I think most people, when they kind of grasp onto what this could mean for them, that there are all sorts of use cases that open up.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see the torch being taken up by a lot of different organizations and for you to start building this inside W3C, which definitely increase the spread of this particular, you know, technique or topic or standard or whatever you want to call it. There have been some criticisms of DIDs. Would you want to go into some of those, or I mean, and how are you addressing them?
I would probably be able to better talk about how we're addressing them if we were more specific about exactly which criticisms. You know, the criticisms that I've addressed so far have been around why do we need a new identifier format? What is this whole decentralized thing? Is that really necessary? What if people, you know, if this is truly self-sovereign, shouldn't people be able to choose a central authority for their identifiers? And the specification that we've written so far, it allows for that. If people want to use the common boogeyman that we bring up is, what if there was a did Facebook method and Facebook had all of the, you know, control over the did document? Some people might like that. Is that still count as a decentralized identifier? The answer to that question and the ability of the group to answer that question lies in our production of the rubric. You know, somebody can come along, Facebook can come along and say, hey, we have did Facebook, it's a DID and it's awesome and great and everybody should get one. And then other people can take the rubric and go, well, okay, but here are the things in the rubric that lead me to believe that there are characteristics of this did method that aren't along with my principles and don't fit with the use cases that I need. So those are the criticisms that I've personally run into. For the most part, especially we had our technical plenary meetings a couple weeks ago where we had our very first working group sessions, and everyone that I talked to, you know, at first it was the polite curiosity, and then it was kind of a more of an interest. And then for a lot of them, there was that kind of light bulb moment of, oh, wait a minute, this could actually be useful for me. I guess what I'm saying, I didn't run into too much criticism of this one, of the DIDs.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main, I mean, Luca probably can come up with a few because, you know, he's been sunk in this particular arena for a while, and he's a representative of InfoCert, so obviously they have their viewpoint on that. But my own things would be, one is there is quite an interesting article in Medium by Elizabeth, who used to work for you guys. Mm-hmm. And it is the blockchain in the context of GDPR. It's not directly talking about DIDs, but definitely there's some of the sort of ancillary stuff that she talks about that would be applicable. One of them, you know, several of them are related to the credentials that you expose to the relying party, right? And the relying party, in order to satisfy some legal whatever They make copies of credentials or somehow are able to capture those credentials because they may need it for their purposes to show that those credentials were captured. And then how do you make sure that they relinquish control, I mean, relinquish or erase those when, you know, several things, you know, when requested to, unless there's a justifiable cause. And this justifiable cause business is quite wide, wide open, you know, because they can always say things like, you know, oh, we require it for tax purposes or for regulatory purposes and so on. So how does that reconcile with your vision of what IDs should do, and will there be movement on that front? I mean, I know that it's a kind of a long-winded question, but it's basically about, you know, how can relying on this prevent people from making copies of your stuff? And how can it, you know, do we need extra, like, regulations to ensure that if they keep copies and they're caught keeping copies, that they'll be put out of business or something like that?
So I think this slide might best allow me to kind of go into an answer for that. Not all DIDs are based on a blockchain or a distributed ledger. I think it's the first response. I agree that distributed ledger based DID methods do need to address GDPR and privacy concerns. I can only really speak to Sovereign when I say that there are a couple of approaches that Sovereign is taking, one of which is most DIDs don't need to be anchored to the blockchain. We right now, it's common to have a DID solve identifier for some sort of public entity, and that public DID is anchored to the blockchain. But when a communication channel is opened up between, you know, a regular person, a private individual, their identifier is known only to the public entity. It's not known. It's not a public identifier. It's an identifier that's private to that relationship, and it's never written to the blockchain. So the first, you know, first method that we're recommending, and that pairwise DIDs. And we even go into, you know, it's one of the groupings that we've talked about with the way people are using DIDs now. Peer to peer and pairwise DIDs are a great answer to that question. Additionally, any ledger based DIDs really do need to have an answer. It feels kind of like I'm punting, but the DID specification will say, here's what a DID looks like, here's what a DID document should look like, and here's what a DID method needs to say about itself. And one of the, you know, we can make sure that one of the requirements for a DID method is for it to address these privacy and security concerns, one of which is GDPR compliance and the right to be forgotten. You know, so it's, we're creating a specification, part of which is requirements for these other specifications. And the real answer to your question is going to have to be made by those method specifications, the more specific things. And we can throw in a requirement that anything that complies has to have answers to that, but figuring out a way to do that normatively is going to be a challenge. And ultimately, whether or not a DID method complies to the use cases that you need is
it's up to that did method.
Yeah, I get that. Meaning, you know, now that if somebody has made a private copy, then to prove, I mean, you know, there are several things there. One is, you know, do not collect more than you need, all that stuff. But in the end, whatever you collected has to be proven to be has to have integrity, which obviously in your case be through the verifying party attesting to the claim. But ultimately, whether the data can ever be proven to be erased, this is the tough part, I think. So either the data has got to be proven to be erased somehow, or there has to be so much, you know, sort of fine or something on this usage that people, even if they have that data, will not dare to use it. I don't know. I mean, this is the kind of answers I've heard, but do you have a, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, the did spec should cover this, but definitely as one of the meta systems that around the usage of DIDs, we have to be cognizant of that.
I completely agree. And I think it would be appropriate. So the one thing that the DID spec will have is a security and privacy concerns section. And I can assure you that this is one topic that will be a part of that. You know, there are, by training, I am inclined toward a mathematical or cryptographic solution. You know, I want the solution to be something that, well, we can allow for pruning of the ledger in such a way that still guarantees the consistency of the data, you know, the literal excising of the data that is to be forgotten in some sort of, you know, cool mathematical way, when in reality, the solution might not involve the cryptographic solutions as much as it will involve the business and legal framework level solutions. You know, the simple solution to GDPR right to be forgotten requests might be, hey, validator node, here's the right to be forgotten list. If anybody asks about these things, don't tell them. We've forgotten this information, so it's not going to be publicly available anymore, even though it's required to still be part of the data set of the blockchain. And I don't know if that's going to be an acceptable answer, because GDPR, as far as I'm aware, is still, you know, very nascent in its actual legal underpinnings, and what exactly it means is still yet to be determined by the European courts and how things are going to be interpreted.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's key, that the GDPR itself came out of the minds of people and has not proven itself in implementation over many years, because many of the effects are emergent.
Right.
That's for sure. But the pruning thing is very interesting, because I think Satoshi himself talks about it in his first paper. And Bitcoin guys do not want to do the pruning, but I think they will be forced to by the weight of the blockchain. And so, you know, whether you run a full node or a prune node, you know, anyway, so that's a separate topic, but definitely, I know that it was on the mind of the initial creator of the blockchain. You know, there have been other sort of solutions like Chameleon Hash, which, you know, which Accenture, I believe, holds the patent to. or some Proctor and Rutgers holds a patent to, that is that you would create a hash that can point to data that can change, and the hash remains unchanged. Anyway, let's not go too deep into the weeds here. I'm sorry.
No worries.
But I think the key is going to be reversibility, of the information, which is very concerning today, because the companies, whether, DIDs have not been adopted by the world at large, but companies do hold a huge amount of data from us. And how do you reverse this phenomenon? Unless you're born into a future where this is guaranteed right from the beginning. But now they hold tremendous amounts of data about us. And, these questions keep coming up. It's very difficult to solve. Of course, I'm not saying the kids will solve that problem.
I think that they very realistically could be part of the solution. I don't think that they're the whole solution. I agree with you on that one. I do, personally feel like the pendulum is starting to swing the other direction. And we are seeing more and more companies come to the realization that they don't want to hold people's data. And the more they can get out of that game, the better. And what will be left with some large players who have based their revenue models around this sort of surveillance capitalism idea, where the more information they have, the more money they make. And I'm kind of excited to see what's going to happen with that, because we've already seen some moves toward evolution. There was a representative of Equifax who's at IIW, and he's saying, hey, who wants to have a session so we can figure out how to get data back in the hands of people? And to me, that's a pretty good indicator that, the sorts of companies who in the past have, made it their bread and butter to know everything about everybody are kind of figuring out what value proposition they really have, and have seen how holding all of that data really can become something of a toxic asset, and many of them haven't treated it as such. And so as people get more and more used to the idea that, hey, my data is mine and you don't have a right to it, and as governments and legal entities, as long as there's that legal resource, as fines are levied essentially against people who breach the trust of their participants, I think we're going to have that pendulum swing more and more the other direction until it'll become inevitable that this is just the way things ought to be, that people hold their own data, and DIDs are kind of a core component of an ecosystem that not only allows that, but encourages it.
Yeah. Very exciting. Tough. Does anybody else have any questions? I think Luca's dropped off. Otherwise, he would have asked about this business with the, what are the criticisms of this? Anyone else has any questions or comments on this?
So, Vipin, this is Sumit. Sorry, just a question. I'm sorry, I'm trying to understand this better. Means when we talk about DIDs and this entire model, what is actually the implementation interface for it? Are we still relying on D apps to be able to implement this, or there are other ways around as well?
So I think you're asking kind of what's the API surface for DIDs? Is that?
Yes, and do they still have a dependency on those APIs interfaces being a DApp kind of models, or they can be even the traditionals as well?
So we are requiring at this point that every DID method describe how to do the standard CRUD operations. How do I create one? How do I read one? How do I update one? And how do I delete one? Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that the interface level and like the universal DID resolver and things that different projects that people are working on will create a separation from, I just want to get the DID document for this DID, versus I need to know exactly how the Ethereum blockchain works in order to do anything with it. The part of the goal of the specification is to create that API surface. You know, what's the data model that you should expect to receive back, and what commands ought to be able to be performed if I have this identifier? What can I, you know, if I go to resolve it, if I go to read it, you know, what do I need to do in order to do that? So the goal is to avoid as much need for a developer to have specialized knowledge as possible, and to rely on familiar operations. I hope that's an answer to your question.
Yes, that helps. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
So the method abstracts the actual operations that are happening, in the sense, I guess, that the resolver will take you to a place, and you can expect the interchange with that method will produce standard documents or standard operations.
Yeah, so the parts of the DID standard that we as a working group are particularly focusing on is, what exactly does a DID look like? What is it allowed to, you know, what's the shape of it? You know, it's based on a URN. It has this DID scheme, then a block for the DID method, and then some DID method specific string after that. What does it look like? The other thing that we need to define is, what does a DID document look like? And one bad thing about my slides is I don't have a DID document to show you guys. It's unfortunately, it's a JSON document, and the specification will say it's going to have these properties in it. It should have these other properties in it. It may have these additional properties in it, so that anyone who gets one can know what it is and parse it, and there ideally will be libraries available to do all of that. Additionally, the DID spec will say a DID method must do these things, and four of those are define the CRUD operations for that particular method. If I have a DID colon solve DID, what's my process for creating one, reading one, updating it, and deleting it?
Or if you have a DID colon ATB, then how would ATB Financial implement this so that they will return the correct format?
Right.
And you can run your own DID server. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't. There's nothing in the spec that would prohibit that. The charter limits us to describing the data model. So precisely how DIDs are resolved is out of scope for our current charter. There's always the possibility that as we move forward, if we come to consensus on did documents and all of that, especially because we already have put a lot of thought into it in the community, and we already have the bulk of a specification that describes it. If we get settled on that really quickly, there's no reason we couldn't recharter and add resolution. But at this point, you know, resolution is out of scope for our specific working group. Though, of course, the community is still moving forward and trying to figure out the best way to do those things.
Thank you, Brent. Anybody else has any questions, any more questions? And we can get to the last bit of this call and get a closure on the call. I guess not. So some announcements here. One is that some of these questions that we asked Brent hopefully may be answered by Kim Cameron in an upcoming call. And he's at IIW, and I had sent him a bunch of questions, some of them, things like reversibility and all that, is some kind of meta concern, which is outside the scope of the DID spec itself. So Kim will be here. Then there is a call for papers or presentations at the Hyperledger Global Forum Summit that has been extended to this Friday, October 4th. So if any of you have any ideas for this, maybe you can put it out on the Identity Working Group mailing list and find collaborators or people to help with it, even if they're not getting to the summit. So that is the other item. I had prepared a set of slides for talk about ID 2020. And one of the main takeaways for me from ID 2020 was the adoption by various governments and others of the SSI model, because that seems to hold out the only hope to create a good identity as ID 2020 drew to a close. And I will be presenting on that when we don't have people, experts like Brent or Kim presenting here. One other thing is, I believe that we should get much more engaged in this working group, but obviously I cannot drive participation here. So, if you can spread the word or respond on the email list with details, that would be great, of how this can be achieved. I'm eager to listen to any idea, because they have said that these are nothing but talking shops and they don't produce any useful work. But our remit is to be a bridge and a connector to the outside world, as well as unifying on themes like identity and other topics. So I think it's, the whole purpose of Hyperledger itself would be lost if we are different projects and do not talk to each other. I did not go into the details on the Identity Working Group implementation call because I did not attend it, but I believe people like Brent show up there and talk about their work as well as the actual work on wallets like Aries, the URSA work, everything else, you know, is discussed there. So that would be a useful place to go if you want to look at implementations. I'm eager to hear anything more that you guys have to say. Does anybody have any closing comments? Somebody on the call talking?
Nothing for me, Vipin. Thank you for the overview, Brent. That was very helpful. Good discussion.
All right. Thank you, Brent, for showing up and spreading the word.
You're very welcome.
We will keep aligned with your group through the GitHub repository and occasionally have sort of talks here on developments there in your group, in the working group.
So I do want to say before we leave that even though participation in the working group itself is limited to W3C members, and you know, of course, I encourage everybody to who you know it makes sense for to become a W3C member. Participation in the spec, as far as reading it and raising issues in the GitHub repo and you know participating on the mailing list, that's public. That's open to everyone. Our meeting notes are all public. And so if you read the spec and there's something in there that you think is just way off or that you need to change, raise an issue. We as a working group, we have an obligation to address every issue that's raised. And that's one of our—that's our primary method of getting feedback from the larger community.
I do see that most of the issues have been closed because of the transition from the VC working group to VC community group to the working group. Are those issues going to be reopened or are they going to remain closed?
They have all already been reopened. I'll post in the chat. So here's the repository for the working group's did spec issues. So you'll see all of those issues have been opened here and we are working toward addressing them. So yeah, nothing was lost in the transition that I'm aware of, I hope, because I'm the one who transitioned everything. So I hope I got it all. And yeah, encourage everybody who has the time and inclination to read the draft spec and raise whatever issues they feel it has, please.
Beautiful. Now we are at time and we will, I think the key is that we should remain involved with the DID spec because it will affect us for years to come, even if you're not members of W3C. With that, I thank Brent again, and the call today is ended. I will post whatever I can about the meeting notes and everything else. And Kelly had raised the issue that, you know, there's some material on DIDs in our identity working group paper. We might want to revisit that and sketch it out in a slightly different way based on the working group progress in W3C. Thank you, and I'm going to close the call.